You're listening to the Table Talk podcast, brought to you by the team at Food Matters. Welcome to Table Talk, a guide to the future of food and nutrition, brought to you by Food Matters. In these podcasts, we chat with visionaries from across the food industry to discover the ideas that will transform our food landscape. I'm Stefan Gates. I'm a food science writer, I'm a broadcaster, and I'm an all-round gastronaut. Today's episode is another in our series about digital health, and specifically mHealth. That's using your mobile phone as a diagnosis and health management tool. It's a relatively new industry. So I want to know how practical mHealth is, what stage of development we're at with it, and whether it's ready to become part of mainstream medicine. Should doctors start prescribing mobile apps on the NHS? Today we're giving them quite a challenge because we're looking at how they might improve the health of our gut, which comes with its own enormous complications. But I'm joined by somebody who's an expert applying the latest technology to our insides, Andre Sommer, co-founder of Cara Care. Andre, welcome.
Yeah, thanks for having me here.
It's a great pleasure. Now, first of all, how many, just a quick question to start off, how many health apps have you got on your mobile phone?
Oh, that's a good question. I have a whole folder of health apps. I would say like kind of 40, must be 40 or so.
Oh my God.
Always downloading the new apps, checking out what's trending, what's on the market, what are the newest trends. But yeah. I'm quite aware that most people have just zero or one health app on their phone yet.
Well, so far. Before we start talking about the details of it, why guts? Why did you get into the gut side of this whole industry?
Yeah, you would think about gut health first when you think about health and diseases. I was one of these persons too. So by training, I'm a medical doctor, and I always had this entrepreneurial spirit. So when I started medicine, I always knew, okay, I would like to change the healthcare system with technology, change the lives of patients. And back then, it was 2015 when I graduated, I saw all these new technology out there, like apps or care solutions tackling mental health issues, tackling diabetes type 2 issues. So all kind of these chronic diseases. And I had a personal connection to gut health. I had a close relative suffering from a chronic digestive issue, and I realized firsthand how hard these conditions can be, how hard they can affect the quality of life, and also how hard it is to treat with the help of a doctor, or even with the help of a doctor. And that made like the perfect connection to say, hey, these patients deserve a complete behavioral change, a holistic therapy. This is the perfect option to help these people and build a digestive health company.
And can you just define mHealth for us, or mobile health? Because I know that there's lots of different ways that you can explain it. How do you like to explain it to people?
Yeah, there's several categories of mobile health. So some people also say e-health, like something that connects to digital. And although when you talk about mobile health, it doesn't necessarily mean that you need to use a native app. It can also happen just in your browser, depending on what kind of device you're at. You could also consider mHealth as something that is only adjusted by your voice, like speaking into one of these smart speakers. So I would more categorize it in kind of digital health areas like remote patient care. For example, what Cara Care is my company, but also other companies like Kaya Health. You have like the mental health space that is only tailored around mental health conditions. There are these like kind of wellness apps that are more on the crossing the border between health and fitness, like all basically what the Apple Watch does or what a Fitbit does, like connecting health data but more in a lifestyle way. There are, of course, like logistic apps that tackle all around booking and health appointment. There's telemedicine, classical, and there are more these data analytical solutions that work more in the background or are not directly to consumer solutions. So I would split it across, categorize it in that way.
Mm-hmm. And if you can just, without blowing your own trumpet too much, just explain to us, what does Cara Care do?
Yeah, Cara Care is, as you said, an mHealth solution. Like, it's a care solution for people with chronic digestive issues. And this ranges from irritable bowel syndrome to chronic inflammatory diseases such as Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis. What all these chronic digestive diseases have in common is that they kind of require holistic therapy. And these range from nutritional change, their specific diets, to behavioral change, for example, via cognitive behavioral therapy. but also some other mental health methods such as gut-directed hypnotherapy, which sounds really esoteric, but it isn't. It's really medicine. And what we do is we combine these kind of solutions and tailor them in kind of a self-help approach to the user with a low contact therapy. So imagine it like a Headspace or fitness app, but just with clinically proven methods. It's like a tailored program. People go through it over a couple of months and can improve their symptoms and increase the quality of life.
The gut is a hugely complicated place. The impact of various imbalances of microbes, bacteria, viruses, yeasts, all sorts of different substances that are in there interact in ways that we barely understand. And whenever I talk to gastroenterologists, they do stress that there is, although we're beginning to understand a lot about them, there is so much that we don't understand. So why should mHealth, or digital health, if you'd rather call it that, help us in an area where we know so little?
Yeah, that's a good question. And actually, in the therapy of, for example, irritable bowel syndrome, there was no huge milestone in the last more than 20 years, basically. And also, I hope I do not disappoint too many, the development of microbiome research doesn't change anything fundamentally as of now, because it is so complex, as you said. So what we know at the moment is that the microbiome influences very largely how your body reacts, and not only tailored to digestion, but also to like mental health. So for example, there is this one study that could show that mice that are depressed could transfer the depression via microbiome transplantation into other mice, that they also get depressed. Same with like obesity. So it's influencing our health, but we don't yet know very little how to make use of that. And in terms to mHealth solution, it's quite complex to take the microbiome factor into account. So mostly when you talk about mHealth and microbiome, for example, in our case, it would be in a clinical trial setting that we not only like do it in a digital way, but that we also collect, for example, samples of the patients so that we can analyze them and match them with what we can detect, like in validated questionnaires, that we can like build patterns and try to understand how does a microbiome change, also change, for example, symptoms. But as I said, very complicated, and I still see very little approaches that can actually change the treatment fundamentally at the moment.
Mm-hmm. But at the same time, we are learning so much more, and it's the information that digital health apps can gather which may end up transforming medicine. Is that part of it? Do you see what you do as much as a diagnosis or tracking tool as a research tool?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's just the beginning, right? So we are evolving from fitness solution now to digital therapy solutions that have also therapy claims. And with that comes also the clinical research, right? So now we have the time when researchers collaborating with mHealth solutions to get the right data. And this is the first time when like digital parameters are connected with like other clinical scorers, blood work or stool samples. And I believe that this will be more and more connected in the future. So in the future, in my opinion, there is no isolated tests like blood work or stool samples, but it's also connected to some other wearable tracking data, digital questionnaire data, so to get the whole picture. But it's just the beginning, and it's rarely happening outside of a clinical trial setting at the moment. But there are exciting times ahead of us.
Now, self-diagnosis is an area that is fraught with difficulty, because people either assume that they're affected by one thing, it's been cured by another, and they don't necessarily make a connection that's correct, but the connection that they want to see. There are other tools I've heard about being connected to digital health devices. So you can breathe into a machine and that will analyze some aspects of it. Is this a worry, though, that if you put the tools of research into the hands of patients, that they don't necessarily come up with the correct information, but that they come up with what they want to say? And human subjects are notoriously unreliable as well, aren't they? Is this problematic, and how do you get over it?
Yeah, you're touching an important point. Tests in the hand of patients, even if they're accurate, they can draw different conclusions out of it. Because imagine, for example, gut intolerance test or so. You can buy these tests or several other tests, do them at home. Some of them are serious and they are supposed to work. For example, a home test to diagnose like a fructose intolerance or so. So you have like breath tests or so that can work. But also you have tests like some sort of blood work allergy tests that are simply not working, but they are advertised all over the place in the internet. And this leads to that patients are self-diagnosing themselves, but drawing wrong conclusions. For example, doing a very restrictive diet because they think they know what kind of food is causing their issues. But also with like real tests, like fructose intolerance tests, that might be true. What we often see is that patients not only have like one specific problem, but it's in most cases some factors or multivariants of problems. And that's why you need to see the whole picture. And this is kind of the problem that we are facing. And also doctors are often having a hard time to see this whole picture, especially with digestive issues. For example, talking about irritable bowel syndrome, because there are mental health factors, there are factors with food, and you need to look at both. And this is what patients can't often do themselves.
So how does your technology work? How do you monitor aspects of the gut, and what sort of data can you get from it?
Yeah, so on the spectrum of gut health, we are taking over the therapy or assisted therapy part. So we are not taking part in the diagnostics yet, but focusing on a diagnosed patient. So if you're a patient that has been diagnosed with irritable bowel syndrome, for example, our first goal is that we want to find out which therapy approach is the right one for each patient. And what we have done is we have collected like a set of more than hundreds of medical questions, also clinical validated scores, and we guide users through this assessment. After that, we have a small algorithm that can classify which therapy module is the right for each patient. And this is not only taking into account if someone is more into cognitive behavior therapy inspired stuff or hypnotherapy, but it's also taking into account if someone is working remotely, if someone does night shifts, if someone has allergies. So all this like tailors kind of the program experience, and then every user gets kind of an individualized plan. And this is the beginning, how we are starting. And of course, in the future, it would be the goal to connect even more data from variables, for example. But right now, it's self-reported data.
Yeah. Just as thinking about the industry as a whole, what state is it in? I mean, it's really early days. We've spoken to a few mHealth companies and everyone's very excited. But do you think it's hit critical mass yet? Is there an acceptance of it amongst consumers? And do you feel that you can announce yourself on the world stage now?
Yeah, we started this in 2016 and we are a German-based company. And back then it was kind of very new. So there were like fitness apps around, very few health applications. And there was like no real way to get this really into the healthcare system. So in order to reach mass adoption, there need to be a way to make this part of the healthcare system so that doctors see the benefits of this solution, not as a threat, but as an opportunity to give someone to their patients that they can do at home and report back to the doctors. And now I would say in the US, since a few years, like employer-sponsored care solutions are a thing and they're already big there, like Livongo is on the public stock market. But for example, you mentioned the NHS is step-by-step covering these kind of solutions. But also in Germany, we have a new system here where like digital health application can go through a certified process. They can get reimbursement across all health insurances. This is huge. So this is the first time in history when 90% of a country's population can get a prescription of a digital care solution that has also a proven effect. And I would say, yeah, 2020 was the year when this got through, and there's no better time for digital health solutions to pick up traction. But still, it's still the beginning.
Yeah, and I'm wondering, what's the response from doctors? I mean, I would say that most doctors are pretty forward-thinking, but there'll be a few technophobes around who are scared of the idea of putting responsibility into the hands of sort of their patients at some level, if it comes down to self-reporting. Have doctors been wary about the application of this technology, do you think?
I would say it's a process. So there is always the one part of medical doctors that are like also the early adopters among doctors who are interested in general, what kind of new trends are there, who want to educate themselves. And these are the early adopters that start like prescribing digital health apps. And there's also the other side that needs to be convinced, mainly convinced that these applications are safe, that the patient data is not at risk, that there is enough clinical evidence. This is important for doctors because doctors want to help patients. And in order to help patients, they need to make a recommendation that they can trust. And it is about creating this trust with clinical evidence and safety.
Now, you mentioned data. I guess we've got to have this conversation. It's something that's cropped up a lot in the UK recently, the worry that people have about their medical data being shared. Presumably, this must be one of the foundation issues for your company, about protection of data. Has it been leaky in this industry as yet? Has people's data been ring-fenced properly, do you think? And do you need different levels of security for this kind of app?
Absolutely. Super important aspect. Like 2 years ago, we and mainly all other health solutions were looking at the requirements, how to build a safe product. And we are still not 100% there yet. But what we can see on the market, like every other week or so, there is a data leak at either like companies that are not dealing with health data, but also there are data leaks with companies that are dealing with either financial data or health data. And that's why it must be the number one goal that this will not happen. And in order to do that, most companies, also Caracara, are going through like a different set of certifications, ISO requirements, storing data only on European servers, encrypted, health data stored separately from personal data. So even if there would be a leak, there couldn't be built a connection between like a person and their health data. And by implementing these several mechanisms of security, it is almost impossible that a data leak could lead to the fact that there is health data connected to a person's personal data going around in the internet. But this requires really a shift in every startup dealing with an mHealth application, because it's sometimes even more strict than building a bank. And that is a real, real challenge for a small company.
Yeah. Now, just turning to the impact of this on other industries. I mean, the food industry has become more and more medicalized in its health claims. The supplement industry has been, you know, is desperate to make health claims. By connecting to digital health apps, presumably there is an opportunity for them. Is this a risk as much as an opportunity? Are you finding that the food industry wants to team up with you in order to sell their products?
Yeah, I mean, we always look at the clinical aspect. So we always need to ask ourselves, whatever we want to recommend or partner with, in a way, if that is even possible in terms of regulations, is this something that we would recommend as doctors? There is, of course, there are, for example, brands that are selling gluten-free products. That would be a perfect match because many of our patients are going through a very restrictive diet and in which they need to avoid gluten in the first weeks. And then like gluten-free products, for example, would be a perfect match. There are also a few supplements that could help, for example, IBS patients. This is also something we are mentioning. For example, we also have a bigger website with content educating patients around the diseases. And this is where we also say, okay, from a medical perspective, this and that is related to it. This is something you could use. I have the feeling in general, food industry and personalized diet, this is also just at the beginning. Because when I look what kind of diet is recommended by doctors, this varies a lot in the last 50 years. You remember like in the, whatever was it, 70s, when I wasn't born, like low-fat cereals were a thing and then they added sugar to it. Now they realize the sugar is the problem. And it seems like we are just at the beginning. And as long as new research is done, we also need to change the way how we recommend nutrition. And so I see a big, big opportunity to even tailor further nutrition to patients. And at some point, it definitely makes sense to connect digital health apps also to services that tailor the nutrition experience for users.
That's really interesting, the concept of literally being able to define what people ought to eat. But at the heart of this, the main health messages that seem to come from public health organizations is eat more fruit and veg, cook things from fresh, don't eat too much meat. I mean, does the specificity of an app go further than that? What else can be recommended by an app other than just eat better, for God's sake?
Yeah, I think in order to really tailor nutrition, what you would need to do is you need to connect yourself to several like input criteria, let me say it like that. Mm-hmm. So you need to know how your body is reacting to food. So there are several approaches. One approach could be you are taking variable data, for example, measuring heart rate, blood sugar, heart rate variability, several other factors, and then self-reported outcomes. How do persons feel after taking certain kind of foods? But also you could do a microbiome gut test and connect all these factors. So there are companies out there that claim only based on your microbiome test, we can recommend you the diet that is the best for you. It's citizen science, right? So it's not there yet to make really strong claims that would convince me, but this is definitely at some point that will be possible. And then you really know by taking all these factors into account, you say, okay, this kind of diet is the best for me. But I'm also sure that like the general recommendations, less meat, a lot of veggies, this is something we know kind of for sure about that is uniquely true to almost everyone.
Mm-hmm. And what about the global picture of all this? Is this technology being rolled out pretty much across the world? Can it be useful for developing countries? And would there be a market in there that would be able to draw companies to set up there? And you know, there are places with specific health challenges. Could mHealth help in this area?
Absolutely. I think this is my dream at some point that all these digital solutions can be provided to everyone owning a smartphone. And we know that people in third world countries, they own smartphones because they need to communicate. So that is would be the easiest way to get medically proven solutions in the hand of everyone. But, and here comes the but, it starts in the Western developed countries because what needs to be solved first is, of course, there is a lack of primary care in most countries. There's a lack of emergency care. So we are still not able to treat the simplest diseases in a lot of countries. And I think the access to telemedicine or telehealth is one of the first steps that people just have access to a doctor. Mm. And then also chronic conditions are also a problem, but they're not addressed yet because there are so many other problems. But I believe in the end, these kind of apps, mobile health solutions, if they're clinically proven, if they have effects, yeah, they can be rolled out to the whole world's population. They might need to address problems that are specific for some kind of countries, but tailored to the needs of the people who live in each country, of course. Yeah, I'm much looking forward to it.
Hmm. And do you think that there will be eventually an AI doctor, you know, that you won't have to go along to your nearest surgery and you won't even have to do a Zoom call with your doctor, but there will be an AI doctor that will be able to diagnose your symptoms and possibly even prescribe your drugs without ever coming into contact with another human being?
Yeah, it might sound scary, but I'm 100% sure that in the future there will be an AI doctor that can prescribe your medicine because we are definitely far away from that. But what you can see is that machines can do therapeutic decision based on certain kind of input. So they are, for example, cancer therapy or so. So they are already services that help doctors to make the right decisions. And there is also a big leap in language processing. It's not there already, but for example, one of the latest apps I tried was like this replica AI app where you could like chat with an avatar. And that has become pretty good in the last years. And I'm sure at some point, if you have your health profile with all the data connected, you have your blood work data connected, you have your variable data connected, you have the electronic health record connected to this, then a computer can make smart decisions. And I'm also convinced that an AI can be empathetic, so that you as a patient, you feel valued by talking or listening to someone that is not human. Might sound scary, but there were some studies around that, for example, chat-based psychotherapy works as well as if you meet face-to-face, and the step is not far from who is behind the chat. Sometimes it doesn't matter. So if you perceive the other side as human, empathetic, yeah, why not?
While you're talking, I'm literally imagining this sort of leap, you know, where people will have 3D printers in their own homes. They'll be able to 3D print a stent for their heart, and then they'll have be a little robot that can do, you know, surgery by AI. And perhaps you can actually solve some of the problems that need surgery within the house. Eventually, I certainly think that an AI doctor is kind of inevitable at some stage, at some level anyway, and maybe eventually all levels. Do you think we should be happy about that or a little bit scared?
We should always be a bit concerned, because if technology has the power to do these kind of decisions, they need to reach a level of capacity to make these decisions. And now we are talking about how far is the step to like a general AI. And there are some dystopic scenarios from many researchers that say if we reach that step, we don't really know what could happen. So if there's a self-trained network that can act in a way that we don't anticipate, yeah, we should always be a bit concerned. But if we can control it, it's inevitable that these kind of technology will come. It just depends what kind of standards do we set, what kind of rules we implement. And then we shouldn't be too scared, actually.
Well, hopefully it'll solve a lot of problems. Now, so there are lots of apps out there. You said you've got 40 or so apps on your phone. What sort of specific areas really excite you at the moment? What have you downloaded that makes you go, oh, once this works, it's going to be great?
Yeah, I think my perfect app is not there yet. So I'm using a fitness app just to collect fitness data around heart rate, sleep data, heart rate variability and that stuff. But I feel it's not connected 100% to my real health status. So that is something that's really missing. And what I'm really lacking is like actionable insights and some kind of service that really tells me on a personal level, okay, based on your sleep data, you should do that. Or also based to nutrition, based on your blood sugar levels, you should try to eat between 7 and 9, whatever. Like insights that really would make a difference on my health. But in order to get that, yeah, we would need to connect more data, better variables into a framework that could provide these kind of action.
And just to bring it back to the gut to end with, it's a huge challenge. You talked about the difficulty of understanding and processing the information that we already have about the gut. What are the areas where smartphones might struggle in terms of mHealth and the gut?
When I think about these applications, of course, I think first about smartphones, because that's what we use to provide the experience to a user. What we should do is we should think about how we can bridge certain things that smartphones can't do. Of course, smart speakers can have better voice input. What's still lacking with smartphones is lab work. That is really a hassle, like collection of different kind of data. If you need to do blood work, these kind of finger prick tests, they're not really good from kind of user experience. You need to send samples somewhere. So having this machine that could analyze stuff, or having a device that could draw blood samples, for example, easier, that would be good. I think this is something that's lacking. What also is lacking is a bit of interoperability. Like all these apps, they collect a bunch of data. Sometimes they create reports, and this is what we're trying to do. We are somewhat trying to connect this to the doctor's patient record system, right? Because they're like two worlds, and connecting these two worlds, this is something that apps can't do yet. But I'm also much looking forward to the date when our apps can write into the electronic patient records, so really to get closer to the doctor who is still making the therapy decisions.
Okay, so last question then. How long is it going to take until integration into real life happens? And what's the biggest hurdle to get there? Is it just general acceptance? Are there new tools that need to be developed for phones? Or is it just merely a question of time?
Actually, technology-wise, these apps are all, don't get me wrong, they're kind of simple. So it's not something technologically that would blow your mind. The difficult part is to use the technology in a way that it can alter behavior of patients. So it's more a psychological thing, how to apply UX and UI best practices to a health application. This is one hurdle. But actually the biggest hurdle is if you have done that, if you've accomplished that building a product, then you need to prove that it's actually working. So clinical trials, which are connected to time and money. This is a hurdle. And then getting the regulatory approval, which requires a lot of other standards, safety and clinical data. So time and money is the biggest hurdle here.
How many years before it becomes, we could call it mainstream, do you think?
I would say within the next 3 years, it is kind of mainstream to get an app prescribed by a doctor, at least in the healthcare system where this is possible. Definitely Germany, maybe also England with the NHS, maybe also US, which are now not anymore ahead of us when it comes to digital therapeutics. But I also believe in a few years that will be more and more popular.
I think I have to say I find it more exciting than I find it scary, but there's a long way to go. So 3 years' time, well, let's look forward to it. André Sommer, thank you so much for talking to me. You've been listening to the Table Talk podcast brought to you by Food Matters. If you enjoyed this episode, you might like one of our other podcasts in which we explore pretty much every aspect of the food industry, from food standards to lab-grown meat. Follow to get every episode freshly delivered to you on Apple, Spotify, Google, or your preferred podcasting platform. And to find out more, take a look at foodmatters.co.uk. Thank you so much for listening.